I am very, very pleased to welcome David Wilson today. David is our Vice President of the Mars Society. He also runs our NASA Ames office for us. It's very good of them to host us there. David emailed me 12 years ago, 13 years ago. He had a space nut from way back, like all of us, and you'd found out about us wanted to find out more. And before he knew what he was doing, he was running our Mars as an engineer with SEMF, a consulting firm in Hobart. He was running our Mars Oz analog station program, developing that. That led to participation in various expeditions. And before he knew it, he was at NASA Ames, where he's been working on a range of projects, including Red Dragon that we'll be hearing about today, the Icebreaker mission to concept to Mars, drilling on Mars looking for life, and also the Enceladus mission looking for possible life and defining the inhabitability of this small but very interesting moon of Saturn. Now, when you go to see a show, you don't want to hear the monkey. You want to listen to the organ grinder. So without any further ado, please welcome David Wilson.
And finally, just recently, which is quite groundbreaking in itself, is a private company, SpaceX, has entered into a cooperative agreement with NASA, which is kind of something that happens between countries. So it's not normal that a country a government makes a collaborative agreement with a company. And that is to do missions to Mars. They would like it starting 2018 and using Red Dragon. So, interestingly enough, the term Red Dragon came from my group, and I just want to explain how that came about. So first of all, I'm going to talk about dragons on Mars. We're not sure what the SpaceX designers were thinking of when they put rockets on their space capsule, but at NASA, a number of people recognised that the capsule may be able to land on Mars using its rockets, and that's a fundamental feature of the rocket design. I think there was a slideshow by an in-situ resource utilisation guy called Jerry Saunders from Houston, and he first showed Dragon landing on Mars on its rockets and doing in-source utilization or extracting water from the surface. Well, when we saw it, at least some of our people looked at it in my group and said, yes, let's land an astrobiology mission on Mars using Dragon. And we, in 2012, we had kind of lunchtime meetings, and that went on to other meetings during work time. So up until then, about that time, was MSL, that's Curiosity, was landing on Mars. And this was an incredibly expensive mission. It was quite a few billion dollars, and it sucked up a lot of the Mars money. And that's one reason why people were busy looking for other ways or cheaper ways for going to Mars. At the moment, there's... So this slide is showing missions up until 2020. So we've got MAVEN, which is now in orbit around Mars, that's looking at the atmosphere. We have the Indian Mars Orbiter mission, and they're looking for methane, they're looking for life, or they're looking for methane sources, which is one of the big mysteries of Mars. ExoMars, there's two vehicles, one's an orbiter with a trial lander, and another one is a rover. And the first one, I think, is going to fly very soon. It's on the way now, yes. So the ExoMars program is on the way. And eventually in 2020, NASA wants to refly another version of Curiosity. At the moment, it's called 2020 Rover. So there is a lot of stuff happening going to Mars. Also, there's InSight, which is based on the Phoenix lander. And that is a geology mission, and unfortunately it's been delayed, but it will be flying, I think, next year, yeah. So there's going to be a lot of stuff flying out there. So we came together and we looked at just the Dragon that was supplying the space station, and with landing engines added on, we did some preliminary studies and we concluded that it could probably land a ton on the surface or thereabouts. So then we looked at ways of putting a payload in, and straight away, because we were interested in getting under into the subsurface, into ice, and I'll explain why ice is important or has been important to us, we started putting drills in them. And just recently, when SpaceX announced that they were going to, they'd like to fly their Dragon to Mars, they immediately called up our drill guy and said, "We want your drill on our Dragon." So the idea of landing in ice is that if there's life in the past or life in the recent times, it would have been now frozen in ice. And by drilling into the ice and getting those samples, we may find the dead bodies or the dead organic molecules from life. We plan to land the Dragon near the Viking 2 landing site, which in recent times, if you notice this photograph, which is not far from the Viking 2 landing site, this is a meteorite that's hit the surface and exposing ice. And after a few days, this white stuff evaporated and disappeared, just leaving a hole in the ground. And it's now thought that the Viking 2 lander landed literally perhaps inches from a lot of ice. And if it just dug a little bit deeper, the world would have been a different place in terms of space travel. It might have activated people to go there at that time, which is 1976, I think it was. So Mars has a changing obliquity, and every 125,000 years it goes through a cycle where there are warm periods, then cold periods and warm periods. So when the North Pole or the South Pole is pointing at the sun, in the high obliquity periods, it can get very warm on the surface, and there can be thin films of water on the surface. And we feel that that's the point where, if there's life on the surface, it can become active, multiply, spread, and then when it goes into an ice age, which is what Mars is in at the moment, it's in an ice age, the life will be frozen up and it just lies dormant until the next warm cycle. And I think it's highly likely there's life on Mars because there's been an exchange of material between Earth and Mars literally since the beginning of the solar system. And we know that biology can be transported between the planets. So if Mars didn't create life on its own when it had a lot of water on it in the past, then Earth could have seeded it. So during the warm periods, Mars would have been somewhat similar to the university dry valleys. And we know that there's life in those regions, bacterial life. And at the moment, it's much colder and drier in those on Mars. But during the warm periods, Mars could have been wetter and a little bit warmer. So we think that there's a possibility if there's life there now underground, it could become active. So that's the idea. So then in 2013, we got funding to look at using Dragon for a Mars sample return. And at the moment, we came up with a plan where one Falcon rocket would launch a Dragon space capsule, it would land on Mars, and inside it would be an Earth return rocket. And after samples were given to that Earth return rocket, it could fly back to Earth, could go into high Earth orbit, or even if technology allowed, we could go direct entry and land on Earth. So it was one rocket would go there, bring samples back. If it went into a high Earth orbit, astronauts, we expected, would fly up to the Dragon and grab the samples and bring them back. Now, there's lots of issues around that, and we'll cover that in just a minute. In the meantime, the mainstream plan, which is the JPL plan, is to have three missions. This is to bring samples back to Earth. One is the 2020 rover, which they're building now, and a sky crane lands the 2020 rover, and the 2020 rover drive around, drills and gets samples, puts it into a cache. And then another sky crane would come in and land a Mars ascent vehicle on the ground, and a little fetch rover would go to the 2020 rover, grab the samples, come back and give the Mars Ascent Vehicle the samples. In the meantime, an orbiter would be sent to Mars, and the ascent vehicle will then rendezvous with the orbiter and they fly back to Earth. And the samples will be brought back to Earth in an Earth return vehicle. And so just in brief, landing heavy payloads on Mars is actually not all that easy. And the reason is there's an atmosphere that's useful, but kind of not useful enough. And if your heat shield isn't big enough, you can't slow enough in time to release the parachutes. And the parachutes at the moment we have can be released at Mach 2. And so you've got to slow up to Mach 2 before you can release your parachutes to land or to slow up faster. And if you come in on a direct trajectory with no lift, as you get to ballistic coefficients, you can't slow up fast enough. In other words, if the mass of your vehicle grows disproportionately to the size of the heat shield and the lift of the vehicle, you'll just prang into the ground before you're slow enough. And that's the big problem. So it's astronauts are going to have a difficult time. And Dragon can do it, but it has to do a pull-up manoeuvre. So when it comes in, it's got to do a pull-up manoeuvre and then either shoot back out into space and then come back down again, or run horizontally and then bleed its speed off so that it's slow enough to fire up its rocket engines and land. A Dragon is not going to, they're not planning to use parachutes on the Dragon vehicle to land. They want to just use rocket engines. The Curiosity, for example, it did a pull-up manoeuvre. It dropped counterweights at the bottom of its curve and it enabled the centre of gravity to be moved, and then it was able to do a pull-up manoeuvre, and I think it ran horizontally and then dropped down. So the G-forces on the pull-up are quite high for a Dragon, in the order of 10 G. So if you're sitting in there, you're going to be squished, and Mars One guys who are planning to use much larger Dragon-type landers will be subjected to a high G-force when they come in. They're going to be sitting there gritting their teeth as they come in. So, and their pull-up is actually quite low, close to the ground, about 20 kilometres. So you don't want to wait. You want to pull up at the right height. So we looked at three options. One is to put a rocket in, which would take a payload to high Earth orbit, or what's called a lunar trailing orbit, which I'll show you in a minute. And another one is to put a rocket in which had a payload that actually, with an Earth entry vehicle, that landed the samples on Earth. And the third was a rocket that landed with just methane propellant, and it made oxygen. It extracted the Mars atmosphere and made oxygen, an oxidizer, and then launched back to Earth on that. We found that that one was feasible, but there wasn't a significant gain in doing that, and not at this scale. And the preference, of course, was to go for the direct return to Earth if we could. And we believe we can, but we have to stretch the technology quite a bit to do that. So certainly high Earth orbit was quite easy to do. So planetary protection, which has drove the design quite a lot. In essence, planetary protection is, a lot of countries have signed up an agreement, and in this case, the COSPAR, with the COSPAR organisation, where we've entered into agreement, and the US has done that, to abide by a set of rules to ensure both the worlds that we're going to are not contaminated, and at the same time, Earth is not contaminated. And also that when we get to other worlds and we look for life, that we actually are, we know we're looking for life. There's got to be good science to show that life is there and we're not measuring contamination. So that's the third aspect of it, which people sometimes forget. But in essence, for Earth's return, is surfaces in contact with the Mars environment cannot be in contact with the Earth environment. So if you're bringing something back, you've got a problem. And so that's why we've got the Earth entry vehicle in a biobarrier. So when it lands on the surface, the Earth entry vehicle is in a barrier to prevent Mars contaminating the Earth entry vehicle. And I'll show you in a minute how we get the samples into that without contaminating it. So there's two aspects to Dragon going to Mars, and these are things that you can watch for. One is it's got to fly on the Falcon Heavy, and you'll know when SpaceX is ready to go to Mars is when they fly Falcon Heavy, and that's the fundamental thing. No Falcon Heavy is no Dragon going to Mars. The other thing is the space capsule's got to do landing tests, and they need to do landing tests because they want to land their astronauts from the space station in it, and they haven't started those yet. And when they've done those and they've got Falcon Heavy, then you'll know they're ready to fly to Mars. So when they talk about 2018 departure time, between now and 2018, they've got to fly Falcon Heavy and do landing tests with their Dragon. So you can get a picture of the timeline as whether they're meeting their timeline goals. But one of the problems that we saw was when you fire up the rocket engines, you're firing your rocket engine into a supersonic shock front. And the question was is whether the capsule would be stable, would destabilize in that. And from studies, we think it will be fine. And SpaceX proved that when they do their when they return their space rockets, they fire up their rocket engines into a sonic shock front. So that problem seems to have been solved or tested in reality. So what we found for Earth return missions, so these are the propellant tanks around the side of the capsule, which normally could land anywhere up to a ton on the surface. In order to do an Earth return mission, we needed to land nearly 2 tons. So we had to fill the cabin up full of propellant. And what we planned to, after it was landing, would deploy solar panels. You could see the Earth return rocket in the top here. A robot arm would come out and it would reach out, grab the samples from a passing rover. Of course, that's really easy to do, as you all know. And then it would place its sample canister underneath the Earth return vehicle, which is inside its biobarrier. And then the rocket would take off. And then when it gets into Mars orbit, it would shed the biobarrier, and then the sample canister is pushed inside the Earth return vehicle. And that way, the Earth return vehicle hasn't had Mars contamination. So we can effectively bring the Earth return vehicle back to Earth. So that's the theory. And this is showing going back to the Earth where we release the Earth return vehicle and goes direct entry. Probably the most safest option is to go into a lunar trailing orbit. And that is where, here's the moon going around the Earth. Here we go. And the vehicle comes in, does a powered flyby Earth, and then does a flyby around the moon, which just swings it round into a big orbit around Earth and the moon. And it's like a free lunch, so it's gravity assist. And astronauts going to capture it can use the moon to throw themselves up after it. It means that it doesn't need a lot of propellant to go into a high Earth orbit, and astronauts don't need a lot of propellant to get to it. It's actually quite useful. And you can use the moon then to bring yourself back to Earth. You do a flyby around the moon to get back to Earth. So in that way, there is such a thing as a free lunch, by the way, in the astronaut world. So that was the Dragon studies, which we did in 2012 and then 2013. We coined the term Red Dragon at that period, which was in around 2012. And it was quite a delight to see SpaceX come forward and talking about Red Dragon on Mars, the first to be flying in 2018. I'm not sure that they can achieve that time frame, but it is a very exciting achievement. And there are people working on that. So NASA's part in that is to assist in the EDL, the entry, descent and landing, and I think communications and other components of the mission. So it's a collaborative agreement. There's no money being transferred between NASA and SpaceX. So it may well be SpaceX pave the way such that there are contracts to fly payloads to Mars somewhat similar to flying to the International Space Station, which may involve other companies as well. So it's opening the door to perhaps a new exciting time.
So from what I've heard of the mission SpaceX is planning for Red Dragon in 2018, the EDL is all the science, pretty much, and there are no things planned. Have you heard anything sort of counter to that, that there actually are any experiments planned for that capsule, other than let's try and land this thing?
So the one in 2018, as I understand, is... So the question was, what changes, really, I guess, are going to be done to the Dragon capsule or for the 2018, and what payloads might go? So SpaceX paying for this flight themselves, and they put a lot of work in the Dragon, and they don't really want to change a lot of it. and they've indicated that the changes, any changes to it, would be minor for payloads. So it's really a technical demonstration, a technology demonstration, what they're planning. But NASA is planning to put some payloads on, and at the moment they're trying to figure out what those payloads might be. But if you have a look at this well, actually maybe we look at the Dragon 2, which is the one that they really plan to fly. The door is actually quite high up from the ground, so that's what it would look like when it lands on Mars. And they're not planning to make any major changes to it. We might be able to put payloads in bays around the side. Let's have a look. There's a bay that's on the side. We may be able to do that. But to get a payload from inside through the door onto the surface is actually quite tricky. You would need a robot arm or some kind of crane device to do that. So for the first one, it's really a technical demonstration. They're not planning on any major payloads for the first one, as when I last heard. It's the second one where they would look at payloads in more detail. Yeah, and then later on, they may... given what happens in that period, they may in fact change the design to... I hope they'll put double doors on so they can drive rovers in and out and so on. But that's my wish. But so certainly the first flight would be more of a technical demonstration.
Does NASA or your department or... is anyone working with Mars One on their project and...
Oh, right.
Is there
so,
any chance... Is SpaceX working?
Oh, right. So, Mars One's very interesting in that I was at a... We had a kind of a workshop where a lot of people from Houston and the human, you know, humans in space, humans to Mars group were coming. There were people doing the Mars mission architecture. There were people who were working on in situ resource utilization, extracting water from the surface. And what struck me was they were talking about, at one stage, they were talking about astronauts being stranded on Mars. And then they came up with the term, well, we'll have to do a Mars One, which means we're going to have to plan for a long-term stay. So people have accepted, Mars One has had an impact in the sense that people have accepted the fact that it could be quite, it's possible. People are very doubtful whether Mars One can do it, but certainly it has opened the mind to that possibility and the idea of a one-way mission. Certainly NASA doesn't want a one-way mission, but the people planning those mission architectures, the idea of being stuck on the surface for an extended period, they have looked at that and they're using the term Mars One for that. So it's quite interesting in that respect. They talk about that particular meeting was to do with a lot of it was to do with planetary protection, and Mars One, of course, would break all the rules pretty quickly. Or let's put it this way: the idea would be to manage. They'd have to manage their impact on the surface to ensure that Earth life doesn't get too widespread. And there is an idea, like Christopher McKay, one of my bosses, has the idea of that if Mars life is found. And Earth life is not good for it, then we have to have a plan to undo, do the undo button to pull back if we felt that was not a good thing to remain there. So those ideas have been thought through or been thought about.
So my question is, at this point at least, it seems to be purely domestic US-led missions. Is there any scope in the future perhaps for a collaboration with, say, Japan or Chinese space agencies?
So you're talking about going to Mars? Yeah. So I know when I went to the first landing workshop, they would love a collaboration. In fact, the organisers felt it was doubtful that the US could do it on their own. Or certainly collaborators, other countries participating would be welcome. This was from their perspective. Now, it may not work from a political level, but from their perspective, other countries contributing technology, like Australia contributing water extraction, mining, robotic mining equipment, would be very welcome. Yeah. So that was the message they gave. They certainly wanted it to be not a pure US unilateral mission. They would like it to be an international mission. So I hope that answers your question.